You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council.
This is New Hampshire Now, 1-9-1450 and nhtalkradio.com. I am Chris Ryan. Appreciate you joining us for the program. This hour of the show is brought to you by New England College as well as Riverbend Community Mental Health. And this segment of the program presented by Rath Young and Pignatelli, a national impact that's unique in New Hampshire. For more information, check out rathlaw.com. Rath Young and Pignatelli, proud sponsors of New Hampshire primary interviews here on the New Hampshire Now program. Coming off a debate performance in which most individuals, including myself, felt was the most dominant one, Pete Buttigieg will be back here in Concord on Thursday for a town hall in the early evening at NHTI, and he joins us right now on the New Hampshire Now program. Mayor Buttigieg, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Good. Appreciate you joining us for the show. So, as I mentioned, the strong debate performance, it looks like there's going to be a more intensified focus on New Hampshire with stops here over the next 3 weeks. What is the roadmap for you to victory in terms of Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, the early primary states? How do you achieve the nomination?
Well, these early states really are key. So you'll continue to see a lot of me in New Hampshire as well as visits to Iowa and the other early states. You know, the best way to demonstrate that you can win is to win somewhere. And so I think it's especially important this year with voters so concerned about who can defeat this president and how do we make sure that we put forward a winning nominee to make sure we perform well. We've got a fantastic ground game. We've got the resources to go the distance. And what we're finding is that my message really is resonating with voters who maybe aren't looking for the furthest left candidate possible, but still want bold ideas. And are looking for something different than the most established candidate with most Washington years, too. For everybody else, I think that, which I think is most Democrats voting, I think that our message is going to land. And yet we see there's still more room to grow in terms of voters hearing our message and understanding what it is that for the presidency.
Yeah, I feel like you have kind of found this new leadership lane where there's been a lot of candidates who are trying to occupy it in between Biden and Warren and Sanders, perhaps, to your left. You mentioned winning. So do you feel that you need to win, you know, Iowa or New Hampshire to propel you forward?
Well, we certainly need to perform well. And I think voters in other early states will really be looking at New Hampshire and Iowa to see what happens there. So we'll see what the goalposts look like when we get a little closer to the day of, but there's no question that we got to have a good finish.
One of the strongest moments of the debate for you was the healthcare exchange with Elizabeth Warren. We've heard other candidates like Michael Bennett talk about this here in New Hampshire, and it seems like there is growing concern about Medicare for All. You get the polling numbers here in New Hampshire most recently, a public option. You have pushed forth a Medicare for All who want it type of proposal. It seems like that's where the voters are at this point. And do you feel that Elizabeth Warren is being, and I think we could make this assumption, if it's just an assumption at this point, that she's not being forthcoming in regards to the total cost and also what this will do for middle class taxes?
Well, I do think we need clearer answers on cost. And I think the central question is the policy itself. Most Americans believe that we do need more options. But I don't think that it's a good move to require all Americans to give up their private plans in 4 years or less. The idea of Medicare for All who want it is that we can create a quality public health plan, a version of Medicare that any American can get into. And precisely because I think it's going to be a good plan, I don't see any need to require Americans to adopt it whether they want to or not. I trust Americans to make the right decision for their own family, for their own health care. And I think that we're going to be better served, not just the politics, but just as a matter of governing. As a matter of policy, we can deliver a proposal like this that meets the needs of Americans and that something that Americans can unify around. Remember, the next president is going to have a monumental task to unify the American people. Mm-hmm. And with something like the Medicare for All Who Wanted idea that I'm putting forward, we can enact a big, bold, and positive reform, and at the same time, also do it in a way that unifies rather than polarizes the American people. Those are the kinds of policies that I think we need, and I think that's what voters are looking for.
I think you make a great point about policies that polarize the American people. And if this becomes an election about, you know, socialism versus capitalism, or Medicare for All versus keeping your current healthcare, people are generally very adverse to change unless there is sort of catastrophic circumstances which force that change. So do you feel that if a Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders are the nominees of the party, that they're going to have great difficulty in a general election trying to sell the American people on the proposals, particularly if they're not completely honest about what they are?
Well, I think it is going to be difficult to push Americans in a direction folks don't want to go. Now, the good news is, most Americans are aligned with the Democratic Party on major policy issues. Want to see higher wages, want to see more choice in health care, want to see something done about gun violence, want to see improvements in immigration, believe in abortion rights. But we need to make sure that we're really gathering that new American majority and engaging it. If we tried to outdo each other in efforts to it's actually ready than ever to embrace a number of Democratic proposals, provided we can keep people together.
That's Pete Buttigieg joining us here on the New Hampshire Now program. I am Chris Ryan. Washington Post pushed forth an article on Friday in regards to Hunter Biden, and that 2015 a diplomat raised concerns in regards to Hunter Biden's activity in the Ukraine. It's previously been thought pretty much across the board that Democratic candidates would stand behind Joe Biden. Does this change anything in regards to Hunter Biden and Joe Biden's activities?
I just don't think we can allow the president and his allies to change the subject. I mean, we are where we are because of not the family of a former vice president, but because the American president confessed to an abuse of power on television, and now his chief of staff has made an additional televised confession that really has led to a constitutional crisis. There's also, I think, the question to be raised if we're going to be talking about family members of people in power. You know, the president right now has a daughter in the White House who's benefiting from Chinese trademarks, a son-in-law who has been exchanging text messages, going around every security protocol there is to exchange text messages with the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia after he was implicated in killing an American resident. This administration has a real gift for changing the subject, but I don't think we can allow that at a time when the abuses of power are so extreme, so severe, and so troubling that even an increasing number of Republicans are finding that they simply cannot defend what the president's been doing.
I think you make a key point, and this is something I've talked about a lot, that we have to view them both separately. And what Donald Trump has done should be viewed in a completely different lens. But there is also this piece of it as well. And are there concerns, though, in your view, about what Hunter Biden engaged in, and also what could happen potentially moving forward? Because it's a big concern for voters, is that there is this kind of revolving door that exists around power in which individuals enrich themselves. And that's a big concern for voters.
Well, I do think as we look to the future, we need to make sure that we have the highest ethical standards, especially for a country that will be recovering from the experience of this administration. And that will be a priority for me. And really want to make sure that even appearances that could raise questions are prevented. And you can expect those kinds of guidelines throughout my administration from day one.
Syria and the situation there has been largely concerning to a lot of Americans, and we still need a lot more answers in regards to what took place. Thankfully, there is a ceasefire. But what took place during that seven-day period and why it took place still has to be answered. Where do you view this in terms of the lens of foreign policy miscues the United States has made, and what needs to be found out in your view?
Well, I think, unfortunately, the consequences of this betrayal of our Kurdish allies go far beyond the situation in Syria itself. That's a major concern because we have seen indications of possible moves toward ethnic cleansing, as well as the resurgence of ISIS, and need to make sure that whatever happens next doesn't make that worse. But the problem that we're going to have to deal with now around the world is that the word of the United States will not be believed by allies who we are asking to put their lives on the line in order to stand with American troops and defend American interests. That is one of the reasons why I think you see more and more Republicans, and certainly a great number of generals and some of our greatest military leaders, expressing outright shock. I would have had a hard time looking some of the Afghans that I worked with in the eye after what just happened to our Kurdish allies, and this is going to make the job that much harder for U.S. troops and those defending U.S. interests overseas.
Final thing, as you obviously ascend and I would expect to get close to, if not in the front runner status following your debate performance, I'm interested in your philosophy in regards to a vice president and also building a cabinet. And in regards to vice president, would you be looking to this field and looking to one of your quote-unquote rivals to serve in that position, or would you be looking outside the field?
I'm sorry, you broke up. Could you put the question again?
Yep. As you ascend following this this debate, I'm curious as to your thought process in regards to a vice president and a cabinet, and particularly in regards to vice president, would you be looking to select somebody from within this field, one of your quote unquote rivals, or from outside the field?
Well, the most important thing about cabinet members is that they're up to the job, of course, and I also think it's going to be very important to have a balanced, diverse, and gender-balanced cabinet. When it comes to the vice president, the fundamental job qualification is simple, though not easy, and it's somebody who would do a good job in the presidency in the event that I would be killed or incapacitated or unable to serve. Now, assuming more than one person meets that test, then I think you begin to think about how you can further that goal that I have of unifying the American people. I will say that the field of competitors is full of extraordinary leaders and people I'm proud to be competing with. There are also a lot of people who maybe aren't in the headlines as candidates for president, but who also deserve to be looked at. And I'm not going to get ahead of myself, but I do recognize this is an extremely important decision because it's a decision that a candidate makes, but if that candidate wins, the country has to live with it no matter what.
In conclusion, would you be looking at Republicans potentially for cabinet members, independents, and go across the country, or would you be looking for some individuals that specifically lined up with you from an ideological perspective?
Well, as a rule, of course, I'm going to want to serve with people who share my values, but you also don't want a room full of people who agree on everything, and certainly previous Democratic presidents have appointed Republican and independent cabinet members, and I think that that precedent in terms of leadership should be considered very strongly when building a team that's going to serve America well.
Thank you so much for your time.
Same here. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. That is Mayor Pete Buttigieg joining us here on New Hampshire Now. New Hampshire Primary Views on the program presented by Rath Young and Pignatelli and RathLaw.com. And this hour of the program brought to you by New England College as well as Riverbend Community Mental Health. We'll come back with more after this.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council.